Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to the number one Bengals podcast. I am Daddy McDuke, as always, I'm joined by Dr. Hoji, the Electric Kismoji, and John Sheeran. And guys, we have probably the best guest for any show in any time, for any team, for anything. Yeah, guys, we have Joe Goodberry on the show.
He is.
Okay. Joe Goodberry is a brilliant analyst. He's a charismatic, fun guy. He's just the perfect guest. So thank you so much for joining us. Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me again.
Yeah, it's great to have you on.
Joe.
It's great to be here because you guys are the best puppet Bengals podcast out there, 100%.
That's right. That's right.
That's my number one. It's the number one. Yeah.
Number one.
Bengals
number,
show. Yeah,
I mean, accents, puppets. Number one.
I don't like to brag, but we are the only Bengals podcast called the number one Bengals. But look, Joe, we have five people watching the show right now. And, you know, that's great. I mean, those are record-breaking, you know, kind of ratings. But from what I've gathered, that is basically just your household, right? I mean, because I know that your daughter watches the show, and then you have a big family. So I'm assuming it's just your family watching us.
Yeah, that's probably exactly what it is. There is five people in here, my wife and I and three kids. And, the youngest, I'll have YouTube going a lot, and I subscribe to your channel, your YouTube channel, as everyone should. But the videos will come across and just automatically play. And she stops every time and just like, I notice her. She's just watching the TV. Doesn't know what's going on. I'm sure she's four. She doesn't really care about football, but the puppets keep her going.
Yeah, the kids, they love the puppets.
Joe, so but basically we don't have a topic for the show other than Joe Goodberry. That's the topic of the show. Yeah. But yeah, well, Hoji probably, but I was just going to say, yeah. So if you have something in mind you want to talk about, because I know you've been in retirement for about, you know, about 5 or 10 years, and you probably, I don't know how much you know about the team. We have a new quarterback. His name is Joe Burrow. I mean, there's a lot you need to catch up on. Yeah. But I mean, anything that you feel like talking about is fair game.
Can I ask Joe Hoji the first question? Can I ask Joe the first question? Joe. Yeah. So, Joe, what we all love about your Twitter feed, which we hear you might start monetizing, and that's a little bit concerning, though I'm really in it for all the Marvel posts and those things. So it sounds like that content's going to be free, so I'll be fine. But what we love is that you've had times of great foresight where you have seen things that the Bengals should do. And then we later saw that they should. And there was stuff I agreed with you with. I believe you're shifting away from Andy Dalton, for example. Question. You have 1 minute. You have Mike Brown's ear for the upcoming season, the changes that must be made. You have 1 minute, and Mike Brown says, Joe Goodberry, I'm listening. What do you tell him?
From this point, so we already have this coaching staff. There's no going back.
You have everything. Everything is what it is.
Right, from this day.
Yeah, from this day forward.
You say you have to attack free agency. You have to get offensive linemen in here, and I think they already know that. I think that's going to happen. But I would say you can't create more holes, which is Carl Lawson, William Jackson, maybe even Mackenzie Alexander, guys like that. You don't want to lose them in order to be forced to make draft picks at that spot in like round two or round three. Premium picks at corner or edge rusher because you're replacing those guys would do nothing for you for this season. So I would say attack free agency, stay aggressive, and be open-minded going into the draft. I think you look at their like 2010 to 2013-ish drafts, they were BPA picks for the most part. They had 10 picks per draft. They could go in there and you'd be like, oh yeah, Marvin Jones in the fifth round, great because he's BPA. And then they started shifting to, well, we need a Will Clark. Well, we need a Russell Bodine. Well, we need a starting corner. We need a starting center. And I think that has killed their drafts in the recent years. So I don't want them to be in that position again. I don't want them to sit there and say, well, we left one hole open on the offensive line. Here, number five pick is the offensive lineman, no matter who's there.
That's interesting. So you have a sort of draft philosophy that's kind of like when you go to a garage sale. You don't go to a garage sale hoping that you're going to find what you need. You go to a garage sale seeing what the best thing is that they have, and then you pick that thing. But what do you do about the stuff you need then, Joe Goodberry? I mean, because there's stuff we really need, then what do we do?
Yeah, and that's like going grocery shopping when you're hungry, right? If you go hungry, you're going to spend $350. If you go after a meal, you're going to pick the things you need and that you want.
Yeah. You guys are going to the wrong grocery stores. I just want to clarify. And also, garage sales, you can actually find everything. Even your wedding outfit, you can find anything at a garage sale. You guys are going about these. It's very bad economic investments, but we can talk about that later. So look, here's the thing. We know the Bengals hate spending on offensive linemen. They're not going to go give $15 million to a guy. Let's be honest, right? I mean, okay. If you look at the Bengals' history,
I can tell you
the history of free agents.
I think they might have to.
No, I was just going to say, I think they should, but I think they're going to find a way to spin this to say, look, we're going to settle for this guard, and he's the guy we really wanted, and he happened to be available for like $8 or $10 million, right, Joe? I mean, I don't think they're going to go above that. I mean, the Reader signing last year and the Trey Williams one just blew my mind. It was so shocking. I don't know if that's a one-time thing or if there's... But other than those two signings, we've never really... I mean, there's that one, what was that? Antonio Bryant or whatever. It was that guy, that the receiver they signed, maybe that was a big signing. It's just so rare for them to go pay market value for a top guy. So, I mean, we have to be realistic. Who are those guards that can bring in that would be a starter caliber, average guard or better?
I think it could be a guy like Cam Robinson of Jacksonville, and he has not performed up to, I think, his potential. I believe it was a second-round pick for Jacksonville out of Alabama 4 years ago now. And I could see that being like an $8 million, $9 million kind of guy that they're like, hey, here's our tackle who's only – and he's still young. I believe he's like 26, which is the ideal range you should be wanting to play in. But I would come away like, all right, you spend some money. And I know fans would – there'd be a lot of fans that would get happy about that. But I'd be like, not sure you're actually upgrading. I'm not sure you're actually getting much better there. Sure, you spent money. And that's kind of been the thing, right? When they have spent money, even last year, it was like, Waynes is not that good. What are they doing? Reader is a nose tackle. What are they doing? You know, are you telling me Xavier Suafilo is going to fix this entire offensive line? It was even in the year spending money, you have to question how they spend it. So I think you're valid there in saying it's just not a monetary thing. It's are they going in the correct direction, right? Are they pulling this team in a way that you see the top teams saying, okay, yeah, the Bengals may not invest in a guard, but these other teams will. So I think, do the Bengals need to finally forfeit some of their constraints that they put on themselves and say, okay, Joe Tooney or Brandon Scherff, we know you're going to make $13 million a year. We know it's going to cost us $25 to $30 million in guaranteed money, something the Bengals don't give out. But you have to bite the bullet and do it if you're protecting your franchise quarterback.
Right. I'm so happy you mentioned Cam Robinson, like, because I think the comparison to Waynes is so direct because like they'll spend money to get Cam Robinson because it'll cost money, and then they can justify like, yeah, we spent money, but are you actually getting the value with that? Cam Robinson's interesting though because like, he played with Jonah Williams in college and he was left tackle, and that was the 1 year that Jonah was the right tackle. And that's actually an interesting debate because we had Brian Callahan, the offensive coordinator, say a couple days ago, like, yeah, we're not really interested in moving Jonah to guard. That might not be the best thing for him, but like, is there a way that you can build this offensive line? Like, are you focused on keeping Jonah left tackle at all costs, or are you open to moving him around? Because if you get Cam Robinson, in all likelihood, you play him at left tackle and put Jonah right.
Right. And I could see, I love the Waynes comparison there because even if Robinson got like $12 million a year, I think Spotrac has him or Over the Cap, one of the two, has him projected at a much higher rate. It'd be a situation where the Bengals go like 4 years, $48 million, right? And only guarantee $15 million of it. Something another team would not do. So they pay maximum value per year, but don't give a lot of guaranteed money. That seems like, now, if like the doctor said, if we're, you know, being a gypsy or a fortune teller here and that happens, you can come back to this segment right here and say, yeah, we kind of warned you guys. And I told John a long time ago, that would be that's the Twitter account that's going to blow up, is the fortune telling draft analyst. And I think John's got a good gift of that too.
Yeah. John's had some real winners with his predictions. I, on the other hand,
I mean, it's funny.
I've been very unlucky with my predictions and picks. It's very sad, but I think it's because my method is very different from you guys. I watch the video and I go with my gut. My gut was right about Tua, but I also thought Tua was going to be great. I was wrong about Tua. I really thought Tua was going to be special.
He's got time.
He does. Yeah.
I will say that John and Joe and other guests that we've had on have been way ahead of the Bengals in terms of evaluation of the offensive line, the draft picks. I feel like the draft Twitter is often better. I mean, Orlando Brown maybe is one exception. There's some cases here and there, but I think the draft Twitter is better in evaluating offensive line than the Bengals sometimes.
It's truly not hard, but it really isn't. Yeah. Like, unfortunately.
Yeah. But
I want to take just a second to talk about eBay.
It's a marketplace. They said pre-owned, rare, vintage, and retro.
Vintage.
Joe, whether you want rare, dead stock, or latest release, find the exact shoe.
Excuse me, Daddy. Did you say dead skunk? Can you go back?
No.
Okay.
You're not. Okay. Rare, dead stock. Okay, dead stock. Hold on, let me show you a picture of dead stock. You see that?
Nope. Unless dead. Oh, there we go. Dead.
So this. Okay. Yeah, dead. Look, as the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place you go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. Okay? And with eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators verify the box, logo, stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. Each sneaker receives authenticity guarantee, includes digital stamp of authenticity, and protects sellers with verified return process. Guys, if sneaker sellers are out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 or more. That's crazy. 100, that's like 10 shoes. Or do they mean each shoe is 100?
Not anymore.
Do they mean they're... Yeah, oh, okay.
Now so they actually have shoes. $100 for sneakers. I bought Kanye's sneakers. They were so expensive. Yeah,
that's crazy. That's crazy. So more than... Yeah,
he got me in the corner. He pushed me.
Look, that means it's free. So that means it's free to sell or flip your collection. I didn't know they charge for flipping shoes. I don't know. But yeah, so guys, go to ebay.com/sneakers. That's eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value in the collection. Yeah.
Daddy, what's this this copy you gave me here? It says, also the show wants to wish everybody a happy Kim Jong-il day. It's February 16th is Kim Jong-il's birthday. And the factory, Happy Time Factory. What is this, Daddy? You sold out, man.
Well, no, it's just, well, eBay pays well, okay, but the show has a lot of costs. I mean, just bringing in Joe is going to break the budget for this month. But here's the thing. Okay, look, okay, Joe, I want to go back for a second. The reason I was asking about guards is because I think that Panini Sewell is going to be available. And I'll tell you why.
Wow.
He tweeted something about the Bengals fans or who they or something. He liked a picture of Joe Burrow. And he, what else did he do? He also follows a lot of Bengals coaches and players like Paul Alexander and former player Willie Anderson. And I think I heard he follows Joe Burrow and whatever. I think he knows something. I think he knows that the teams ahead of the Bengals are not going to take him and the Bengals are going to take him. So I think we're going to have a left tackle, you know, cornerstone. And then, you know, Jonah obviously on the right. What do you think?
Can he know that really? I mean, is it up to him?
He also know the future? Is he just one of us?
Yeah, is he a prognosticator?
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, really, okay. It's not up to him. He's highly sought. He is to the draft what my Kanye sneakers are to sneakers. I mean, he's very highly sought, very expensive. And I don't know if it's completely up to him where he goes. I think he's gone. We had a chance before.
Joe,
we
were okay, look.
Five. But Joe is the guy. So Joe.
Yeah, we're about Joe. Yeah, but Joe, look. No, I just want to say, look. Okay, yeah, go ahead. What do you think? Yeah,
Joe.
Penny Sewell's good. I mean, what else is there to say other than I think some have anointed him as maybe a can't miss or a generational prospect. I would say maybe generational prospect. Prospect and player for me are two different things. Player is how you have performed up to this point or what I think your abilities are right now. What can you do? What can't you do? How often do you struggle? How often do you get beat? You know, how often do you make impact plays, right? That is how good a player is. A prospect takes in everything into account. Your size, your athleticism, your age, your production, your whole profile and projecting them into the NFL and projecting how good they're going to be into the NFL, which is different from college, especially for maybe more so for some positions than others. So when you look at Penny Sewell, he is a good player. He is a great prospect. two different things, because when you watched him at Oregon, you got to remember he was 18 years old for a lot of this film. And of course, a guy that's 18 isn't going to be as finely tuned as someone that's 22 years old if we're comparing him to a Christian Darrisaw, right? So you're going to see him. It's weird with him because he gets beat, but he doesn't give up the pressure of the sack because he's such a freak, because he's huge, because he's athletic. So he gets his hand knocked down and it really doesn't matter because he gets his other hand in there, or he recovers, or he's so wide to get around that it takes Zach Bond too long to get around to actually affect the quarterback. So, you know, you look at him and say, okay, so there's some things you have to work on with him. He needs to develop. And if I think going into this year before he opted out, the conversation was he's going to be a lock for like a top three pick. But whenever you say that for a year in advance, it's always the caveat. He's going to be a lock for the number one pick. He's going to be a lock for a top three pick if he takes the necessary progression steps that we project based on what he's done in 2 years, 3 years, whatever he's played. Because we don't get that year of development with Sewell. We don't know. You kind of have to go back a step and say, okay, so where was he based on tape? He's probably worth a top eight pick or so. When you start to put in the whole profile, the projection and everything, he's definitely worth a top five pick. And I think if he's there, it's the pick and it's a slam dunk and we really don't have to worry about it. And I don't know if that means he plays left tackle or right tackle, because I think you could do either, because he's so young and they have to develop him so much anyways that you're going to say, okay, you're at right tackle. So we got Jonah for at least two more years, probably three more years, and say, Sewell, you're going to play right tackle and you're going to learn and train at that position. You got to teach him as much anyways if you're going to put him at left, in my opinion, because the guy is so young.
But also,
yeah. Oh, go ahead, John. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like what Joe said, because back like this time last year, he was already touted as this all world tackle, and there's nowhere to go but down from there, right? Like he can only be the first overall pick in terms of like raising that stock. So naturally, everything after that is going to be, you know, slight nitpicking. That's kind of what we've seen over the past month or so. And had Sewell played in 2020, all these questions that we have about him, they're probably not questions anymore, because a guy like him who has the profile of the athleticism and the size and everything, those issues on tape, they probably aren't issues anymore in 2020, and then all those questions kind of get erased. So that's really what it comes down to with the Bengals, because usually when they take a guy this high, there's not a lot of questions with them. Think AJ Green, think Joe Burrow. Sewell has more questions than both those guys as prospects, but had he played, we might not have those questions. So it's really going to be, are they going to just bet on the potential, or are they going to take a guy that they're a little bit more sure of?
Yeah. I agree, John. I mean, it reminds me of a great prospect, you know, that I drafted, you know, he's like 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
You know, it was a big risk, you know, hiring him to an intern. Yeah. He was actually too young to be employed. So we just made him an intern, and we are stuck with that arrangement up until now. Talking about John Sheeran. Guys, yeah, look, here's the thing.
Drafted because I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. It's drafted in like, conscripted. Like
more the military draft than actually
Vietnam.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you want them young, because the younger they are, the more accepting they are of indoctrination.
Oh yeah.
So.
Oh,
I'm still yet to hit my breakout age. It's true.
Right. Yeah. And they get used to the abuse, and then they don't. It's like a mental state where they don't want to break away from it. Yeah. Okay. Look, Joe. Let's just say Sewell is gone, or they don't want to take the risk, and they don't want to go with Pitts. They don't want to go with the tight end. There's so much debate about this receiver thing. I know where John stands. It's Jamar Chase. There's no question. Where do you stand on the top receiver that the Bengals should target?
Again, we got to define prospect versus player, because I think if we were to look at Waddle and Smith and compare him to Chase as a player, we'd come out and say, and it's close. It's really, really close. They all can do a lot of good things. I mean, you don't get that productive and win the Heisman for Devonta Smith unless you are a very good player. And I think he can come in and at least his floor is pretty high. Waddle, even though he was injured, I think he could be better than Smith, to be honest. If he was healthy the whole year, I mean, there's the speed and the ability to make these grabs in contested situations is a rare combo. So a lot of teams are going to want him. And Jamar Chase, what he did a year ago with Joe Burrow was just fantastic. He was the number one receiver in the country for a reason, because he is very good at a young age. Now, when you wrap that all together and you start to build a prospect profile, I don't think it's even close. I think Jamar Chase is the number one receiver in this draft because of what he did at that age, being 19 years old and breaking out at that age and averaging 19 yards per catch with Justin Jefferson, who we know what he did in the NFL, and they still were featuring Jamar Chase in many of those games as the outside number one type receiver, and Jefferson was the slot guy, probably skewed our value and the NFL's value of Jefferson wrongly. But you know, I think you can look at it and count it twice and say, well, that's because Ja'Marr Chase was that good. And I think we go back and we look and we build this profile of when a guy breaks out at that age, when he's that productive at that age, when he can be a deep threat. But yet, you know, if you talk to a lot of people, they view him as like a contested, strong, sure hand type guy. I've seen people compare him like Anquan Boldin, and Anquan Boldin cannot run with Ja'Marr Chase. Anquan Boldin is not going to average 20 yards per catch. I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to run a 4.45 and be the fastest guy on this receiving core. He's your number one. He's your number one, and it opens everything up for Higgins and Boyd. You think Higgins and Boyd were good last year? Wait until the defense has to tilt their coverage towards Ja'Marr Chase and see how much better and how much bigger the windows are, how much more separation everyone gets, and how much of an impact it has not on Joe Burrow, but this entire offense.
I'm sold.
Okay, well, that's something I want to talk to you about.
I want him. I want my Ja'Marr Chase.
Well, okay, well, just now. Real quick, Pitts or Chase, if you have the choice. Chase.
I still take Chase, but, man, we should have a conversation about Pitts, because Pitts, what he does at tight end is freaky. And I know, like, every 5 years or so, we're talking about some freak tight end that deserves to be a top 10 pick. I'm not sure he's – I mean, Kellen Winslow, to me, is what I think of, and he didn't work out because he might have been a bit crazy. But Pitts is really, really a freak, man. He looks like Darren Waller. He looks like these guys that you cannot cover in today's NFL. You're going to split him out, and he's not just a tight end. He's a wide receiver. I mean, he's Auden Tate at wide receiver, and then you can put him in at tight end and stretch the middle of the field, stretch the seam, and he averaged 17 yards per catch. I mean, he, for all intents and purposes, would be your number one. He's going to get 10 to 12 targets a game, and you're going to move him around. You're going to flex him out. You're going to 3-by-1 formations with him by himself and the three receivers on the other side. And think of that fun.
I want that, man.
Wait, hold on.
You can only have one, Hoji. You can only have one top draft pick.
Just so Joe doesn't get misquoted. Just so Joe doesn't get misquoted. We just to clarify, he can run. Kyle Pitts can run past Auden Tate like that.
Oh, like, yeah. Like, Auden Tate's running a 4.65.
He's saying his hands. He's saying his hands are like
Big he body catch, contested, like, crazy catches, catch radius. Yeah. He's Auden Tate. But Auden Tate can't hold a candle to him in terms of route running, speed, and agility. I mean, honestly, if you lined up all the receivers and Auden Tate and Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and Kyle Pitts, Pitts is their most athletic guy, and he's a tight end.
So let me Joe Burrow
is not he that range of where the tight end being closer is what works for Joe Burrow anyways. Why don't we just get him and he could be the Gronk to his, you know, to the Brady, like that relationship. I love it.
It could work.
Joe, hold on. You're talking about tilting the coverage because of his speed. You're talking about Ja'Marr Chase. We had John Ross. I know John Ross, all the issues, whatever. And Joe Burrow had struggles throwing the ball deep. Joe Burrow, you know, most of the time didn't have the time to kind of get to his big play receivers, right? And so if you don't fix the offensive line, and by fix, I mean, look, last year was a mess. It might just be a slight, if we don't get a top draft pick, if we don't get Sewell, it's going to be maybe average, maybe, probably lower. So, I mean, if we don't fix that, what is that even going to do for us? You know, having a guy who can burn by, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, well, first of all, there's two things I want to ask you about. Yeah, first of all, is that can he really take advantage? And second of all, what steps does Joe Burrow have to take to connect on more of those deep balls from his perspective? Yeah.
Yeah, number one, you can't pin it all on Sewell in terms of the hopes, or whoever that fifth pick, if it's an offensive lineman, as hopes of turning this offensive line around. There's more holes than one. And if you're comparing the more impact on this offense as in an entirety, getting one good offensive lineman still leaves you with three other bad offensive linemen. Potentially, we don't know when Trey Hopkins will return. As right now, I'm thinking Billy Price at center. And that is exploitable. That is beatable, right? That is still a major hole and a major hurdle for this offense. Adding one receiver right now impacts the receiver group completely. Adding one tight end impacts the receiving group completely. So those guys, you could argue, will have more of an impact on the offense and Joe Burrow's production. But you also can't pin it all just on that fifth pick. They need to attack free agency. It's not even an option. They can't just say, we're going to draft a guy at five. And even in round two, that's not enough. They need to go out and get these guys, because rookie linemen can be very hit or miss that first year, or at least in definitely in that first half. You look at, like, Andrew Thomas last year, the first offensive lineman taken. His first half of the year sucked. And it probably got the offensive line coach fired, and he played a little bit better in the second half, but still comparable to what Bobby Hart gave you last year. And I know we don't like Bobby Hart, and he's probably the symbol of this offensive line in the last 3 years, and we'd like to move on from that. But we're talking about small bits of getting better when going to a rookie offensive lineman to what Bobby Hart gave you last year. Now, there's no saying Hart will give you that again, because throughout his career, he hasn't been close to that. That was his best career year, so we should expect him to probably regress a little bit. But the point is, one offensive lineman isn't going to give you drastic improvements. They need to add 3-4 guys if possible. 2 in free agents, 2 in the draft would sound great. So in terms of, can you get the deep ball? I think the misconception also is that you need 5 seconds to throw a deep ball. It's not. The ball comes out in 2.5 seconds, 2.25 seconds a lot of times. That's, you watch these guys drop back and throw. There's no pressure there. The ball's getting out before that happens. It's actually about getting the mismatch you want first, pre-snap, more than anything.
Let me just do it. I mean, look, I agree. The deep ball comes out pretty fast. But I think the confidence that the offensive lineman has, like, when you look, when they're, it's like, it's kind of like their mechanics. The guys that have the best, you know, most successful deep game, a lot of times it's because they have confidence in their offensive line. And so then they can just kind of go back there and go through their motions. With the other guys, if they have that time to get the deep ball off, it's kind of like they're taken by surprise, right? Is that fair? I mean, what was it with Joe Burrow then? You know, why was his deep ball inaccurate? Yeah.
It has an effect. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you don't feel like you can get to that second or third guy sometimes, maybe the safety jumps on your number one read, right? And now I don't have time to reset and come back the other way and hit a guy on a deep crossing route or whatever the case may be, right? So I'm thinking of already decided pre-snap reads of, all right, I got one-on-one on the outside. You drop back, you throw. Offensive line does not affect you at all unless some guy completely falls on his ass at the snap. So at those plays, you can still get deep balls off. And the Bengals did a lot last year, but it ended up being just that Burrow wasn't very good at it. And the receivers weren't very good at it. AJ Green was a disaster on almost every single deep pass. I'd love to make a super cut of just his deep balls from the past year, because it was ugly. He missed a lot that were in his range. He could not body through anyone anymore. He could not gain separation. He didn't go up for any of them. So that is not a helpful situation when you got a receiver that they kept trying to feature in a lot of games that almost gave you nothing in terms of production. You could plug in Josh Reynolds into that role, a mid-tier free agent, and you probably get better production out of that receiving group, and it helps Burrow's numbers overall. But Burrow can be better. There was a lot of deep balls that just weren't there. We know arm strength isn't a strength of his, but that also affects your accuracy deep, and I think that did in a lot of ways. And I do think it can get better. And timing with the receivers, not having an offseason at a camp, and having no AJ Green because he was injured in camp again, it has an effect. So what do you do when Burrow is now injured and may not have a camp and offseason again? I think it's hard to just say he's going to improve automatically without being able to put the time in to do it and not have the time to throw at these receivers. So what do? You got to elevate the pieces around them. I think you need to add receivers. You need to add offensive linemen to make him better.
Well, yeah. I mean, adding Ja'Marr Chase because of that chemistry, you know, I mean, I really do believe that some quarterbacks, the nature of the ball that they throw fits certain receivers better. Do you know what I mean? Like I've seen this with Andy Dalton. You know, sometimes people laugh, but I saw that his timing with Brandon LaFell was very good. Even though Brandon LaFell was not a great receiver, but they had a certain, it was interesting.
Inside breaking routes.
And, you know.
Yeah. LaFell ran him well, and Dalton threw him well.
Exactly. There you go. I never knew that was the reason, but that makes sense. But look, so yeah, was it Ja'Marr Chase? Is there something was there between those two? And so it's possible that adding him would do that. And also, I don't know, this might sound, you know, kind of, you know, might seem kind of like a simple solution, but, you know, I know Jeff Blake trains people to throw the deep ball. I wonder if they would, you know, if he'd be willing to work with him, because, you know, Jeff Blake was only like 6'1" and wasn't like a huge guy. I mean, so it's like, where is he getting this arm strength? He says it's a finesse throw, and he has the certain, you know, mechanics to getting that beautiful rainbow. Yeah. And so I wonder, you know, I think Joe Burrow has the same physical strength as Jeff Blake, so he should be, I don't know if that's something they'd be looking into. Yeah,
you don't need a crazy strong arm to throw the deep ball. A lot of it is timing and accuracy. So we saw Burrow was really, really good at LSU throwing the deep ball. And I think there's no reason to believe he can't at least get to average in the NFL doing it. And if that's the case, it's going to be a big boost for this offense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, speaking of big boost, being on the show was a big boost for our show. And obviously, we have 25 people watching. That is about 20 more than our average. So thank you for everybody for tuning in and watching Joe Goodberry. And honestly, guys, this movement, this the number one Bengals podcast, we're just getting started. Okay, we're just getting started. You've seen nothing yet. Yeah. Okay, so don't forget to subscribe to the show. And Joe, is there anything? Look, someone commented about your hat. He said, I love that hat. I want to get a hat like that. You can get Joe Goodberry's hat. This, I think, reach out to him on Twitter.
More will be coming soon, yes.
Okay, so just you can reach out to Joe and get one of those hats. And you can subscribe to the show. Leave a 5-star review. That is all we have for this show. For John Sheeran and Dr. Hoji Dekrigsmoji, we stepped out, I don't know, probably to save some sort of creatures for some very elitist event. And for Joe Goodberry, I'm Daddy McDuke. That is all we have. We'll see you next time. So long, sweetie pies.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.